The decision to overturn Roe versus Wade has sent shockwaves through the United States, toppling the constitutional right to abortion, which has stood for five decades. And as the dust settles, it appears that Roe could just be the beginning. And it seems surveillance might be the greatest threat to women seeking a now illegal abortion. Michelle Goodwin is Chancellor's Professor of Law at the University of California, Irvine, and the author of Policing the Womb, Invisible Women and the Criminalisation of Motherhood. Welcome to the program, Michelle.
Me on the program.
Abortion in the United States is now a matter for the states. In some, abortion will stay legal. Others have already banned abortion or are moving to. What do you make of this divided situation in the United States now?
It is a very troubling time in the United States, not only for what it portends for bodily autonomy and liberty and reproductive health, but this is a dramatic time in the United States for the rule of law and also for our democracy. This is the first time in the Supreme Court's history that there has been a right taken away. And when you think about the long arc of justice in the United States, it was a country that practiced slavery. It was a country that discriminated against women and employment, education, et cetera. And the same was true for people who are LGBTQ. So that the Supreme Court was played a fundamental role in that arc towards justice along with our Congress is not a surprise. We don't believe people should be enslaved. We don't believe that women should be barred from an education or meaningful life opportunities. We do not believe that people are gay who should be criminalized. But what we find is that there's a movement in the United States which says that some of those things that we thought should be towards that arc of justice should be revisited. And that's what the Supreme Court has done. Such that now in the United States, there are free states like California, New York, and Illinois, and Colorado, where a woman or a girl can come to in order to have the reproductive health care they need, including an abortion. But there are states such as Mississippi, Missouri, Kentucky, et cetera, where that won't be available. And in those states, if a girl is 10 years old, has been raped, and is pregnant in those states, that girl will be forced to carry that pregnancy unless she can get to a free state.
For now, birth control and the morning after pills are still legal and accessible. However, there are reports of conservative lawmakers planning to ban contraception as well. How likely is that?
Well, that can be very likely. There are people who are campaigning on the promise of banning popular forms of IUDs, IUDs, which are a popular form of birth control. It's not an abortifacient, but there are very conservative lawmakers who want to make this part of their policy agenda. Plan B, which is the gold standard to be used after cases of rape, are also what is being targeted. Part of what's being targeted in the anti-contraceptive campaign. Now, the Supreme Court decision says that contraception will be protected, that those rights aren't going away. They say that the right to same-sex marriage is not going away, or interracial marriage. But it's worth noting that the most conservative member of the court, Justice Clarence Thomas, issued a concurring opinion. And in his concurring opinion, he actually said that he would be happy to have revisited privacy protections for contraception and also for gay marriage. Notably, he excluded interracial marriage. And this is interesting considering Justice Thomas is in an interracial marriage. So the one area where he thinks an exception should be noted is the one that affects his personal life.
There are also concerns about tech and data. Following the ruling, a tweet which read, "Delete your period tracking apps today," went viral. Could people who are seeking an abortion realistically have their data tracked like that?
That's right. We've already seen this taking place during the Trump administration. There was the tracking of the menstrual cycles of girls who were in detention centers. There were individuals who were involved in the Trump administration who articulated that that states should, in fact, be involved in the tracking of this kind of data, specifically targeting Planned Parenthoods. Given that much of these apps also track data, geolocation data, and that these apps sometimes sell to third parties or make accessible the data, that personal private data to third parties, then people should be concerned. Women and girls should be concerned about the healthcare apps that they're using as being potentially used by prosecutors who would seek to know when women are going out of town and what they might be going out of town for. I mean, granted, it's not going to be easy, but that's actually not stopped prosecutors from using online tools as means of prosecuting individuals. They've done that with gang-related individuals who haven't even committed crimes, but who've been affiliated with gangs. They've used online and social media to track them.
What about internet searches for things like abortion pills? Could even a simple Google search for that sort of product land you in trouble with the law?
Well, this is also a very interesting question, and we don't know. But what we do know is that Google and other search engines have said that they have no part in any of these kinds of matters, such that they should be held harmless if, in fact, there is this kind of tracking that emerges in these spaces. What we do know is that there are entities that pay in order to get their materials higher up on a search. So organizations that call themselves crisis pregnancy centers often veil themselves to appear like they are abortion clinics when they don't provide those services, and in fact strongly try to counsel people against abortions. Well, they try to cloak themselves in these search engines as appearing like abortion clinics. So there are many other strategies that might be used in this space other than just that particular angle that you're asking about.
You've argued that the court's ruling is selective and opportunistic, especially when it comes to black women's bodily autonomy, liberty, and privacy. What do you mean by that? What's your legal argument here?
It's not just my legal argument. It is the legal argument that stands in our United States Constitution. The 13th Amendment and the 14th Amendment were ratified by the Congress of the United States after a sufficient number of states ratified those amendments. Those were amendments that abolished slavery and involuntary servitude and established equality and freedom under the law, specifically referencing the plights of Black people. Now, if we all agree that the 13th Amendment stood as not just abolishing slavery and involuntary servitude for Black men, but that it also included Black women, which it did, then one would have to ask, well, what were the drafters at the time seeking to free Black women from? And what was very clear and written about in Europe, written about extensively in the United States, written about by members of Congress, was that Black women were forced into involuntary reproduction. They were sexually assaulted on a regular basis, and this just wasn't adult women, it was also little girls. In fact, Senator Charles Sumner, who led the way for the 13th Amendment's ratification and articulation in Congress, was nearly beaten to death 2 days after giving a speech about the rape of Black girls and Black women.
Michelle, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Michelle Goodwin is law professor at the University of California, Irvine, and author of Policing the Womb, Invisible Women and the Criminalisation of Motherhood.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.